Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. Proudly present, No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. Let's give a big congrats to Beck for picking up the Album of the Year award at last week's Grammys. We here at No Borders No Race honored Morning Phase over a month ago with the number 2 spot on our top 20 albums of 2014 list. So if there was anyone more deserving of this award out of everyone nominated, it was certainly Beck. Of course, Kanye West had to kind of poo-poo a bit on his parade, saying that Beyoncé deserved this award more than he did. Even though Beck agreed it was bad sportsmanship on Kanye's part. I know I've backed Yeezus on a few things he said in the past, but I'm sorry. Beck had the better album. I can't think of a single song off of Beyoncé's album that was memorable, but there were plenty on Morning Phase that definitely stood out. As for our actual pick for Best Album of 2014, Moondust by the Pillows, well, I think that the Grammys have something against non-English albums, but, you know, that's just my opinion. Still, if you haven't heard Morning Phase, please give it a listen. A truly great album. Now, let's get the show rolling. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cgjapan.co.jp, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. But before we truly start, here's a little something from our friend Tom Oleski about some of the artists that we'll be playing on today's episode.
Hello, listeners of No Borders, No Race. This is Tom Oleski, and I have a show coming up called Uncle Tom's Music Garage. Very proud to introduce 4 bands to you that will be playing the show. Their names are Honeydew, Glow, and The Forest, Angry McFinn and the Old Yank, and In the Air. All of them are great bands, and I hope you'll enjoy their music on this podcast. Take care.
And that concert is happening at the Lifehouse Anga on Friday, February 27th. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. with the first band coming on at 8. Tickets are 1,000 yen, but only 500 if you bring a student ID. We'll be playing these bands throughout the show, and we're going to start things off with some Honeydew. This song comes off of their 2011 album, Don't Know Where. This is Turbo Nitro. We'll be right back. Of compilation entitled Best, that was Spy Air with Just One Life. Anime fans will recognize this as the theme song to Samurai Flamenco, which has been licensed by Aniplex of America. So, yeah, get ready to fork over $40 for 4 episodes each. The big news out of Hollywood is that Spider-Man is back in the comfortable embrace of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Well, not exactly. Sony and Marvel announced that they would be partnering up to bring the web-slinger to the Marvel realm, with Peter Parker first planning to appear in the Marvel movie scene, possibly in Captain America: Civil War. Spider-Man will then be featured in his own standalone movie, which could feature other Marvel superheroes in the storyline. It's not the perfect deal, though, as Sony still has the final say in creative control and such, but it looks like Marvel will be working on the stories and then just passing them to the higher-ups to see which one gets the bigger thumbs up. Honestly, this victory belongs mostly to the Marvel fanbase. We have all been clamoring for Spider-Man to appear alongside the likes of Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, and even the Guardians of the Galaxy. The Marvel Universe is filled to the brim with epic crossovers, and having Spider-Man finally join the foray means that there are so many storylines that can be attempted to bring to the big screen. We're talking thousands of ideas, which, to be honest, my buddies Mayor Young from Fantastic Four and Clay Inferno from the League will be better at throwing because I just watched the movies. I know, I'm sorry. The only comics I have time to read are Sex Criminals and Hayate Combat Butler. Come on. But here's my question. With Spider-Man now on the table, how long before we see a similar deal with Fox in regards to the X-Men and Fantastic Four? Yes, these franchises have been incredibly successful for the News Corp company, but don't tell me someone in the boardroom isn't salivating to the thought of the Thing battling the Hulk, or Wolverine getting in Captain America's face, or Deadpool challenging Tony Stark to a drinking game. The ultimate crossover needs to happen, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you can't have Infinity War happening without some of these characters. But getting back to the whole Spider-Man thing, the only suggestion I could ask Marvel and Sony to do is not to milk another origin story. We've seen Uncle Ben die twice already. Give the old man a break. And we've all seen Parker go through his growing pains. I think if Spider-Man could be like college grad age or even just a bit older, it could lead to something more original. Have them be married to like Mary Jane. Maybe even give him a child. Give this guy a personal reason why he is still Spider-Man, not just the old to kick bad guy ass excuse. If you can do that, Marvel and Sony, I think this new partnership can lead to bigger, better things within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Remember, with great power comes great responsibility. Let's get back to some music. Here's the next band that's going to be featured at Uncle Tom's Music Garage. They're called Glow and the Forest, and this song can be found on their Pheromone Chemicals album, available on Bandcamp. This is Slow Death Suspender.
Thank you.
Giddo Giddo Hustler with Hyper from their Giddo Giddo Galore EP. The band split a few years ago, so please go and honor their legacy by buying that and their album Love and Roll. You know, it's not often I get the chance to dive deep into an enjoyable turn-based strategy game, at least in video game form, but from what I was able to check out in the demo for Codename Steam, we're going to be in for a pretty cool experience. When going hands-on with it, it had a mixture of XCOM and Final Fantasy Tactics, and I love how you need to use your Steam wisely as you traverse the gaming area. Use it to both maneuver and attack your enemies, and if you don't have enough Steam in your arsenal to do both, then your best bet is to find cover to avoid enemy fire. Fortunately, you're able to backtrack if needed before making your decision, but if you fire upon your enemies after you've moved a few steps, then there's no going back after that. It's quite the challenging game. And what I love most about Codename Steam is its visual style. It reminds me of those old Space Age comics from the 1930s, and perhaps the old Tales from the Crypt issues from the 50s. And I'm always a sucker for that cel-shaded look, maybe more so when it looks more like an anime, but I'm a fan of the classic comic style. It's kind of why the Improbable Paper Pals levels in Comic Jumper were my favorite part of the game. Of course, the real best part is playing as steampunk Abraham Lincoln, although it still doesn't beat the Wolverine Lincoln in that Five Iron Frenzy video. In fact, in Japan, the full title of the game is Codename Steam Lincoln vs. Aliens, which is a cooler title if I should say so myself. So if I ever review it, I think I'm just going to give it the whole full-fledged title, because Lincoln vs. Aliens, I know there's Abraham Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. I'm staring right at the Blu-ray as I'm recording this. And I love that movie, by the way. I thought it was very, very underrated. But going back to Codename Steam, this game is going to be hitting the Nintendo 3DS on March 13th in the States, and hopefully, from what was presented in the demo, it will be a great experience overall. Also, if you have the amiibos for Marth, Ike, Lucina, and Robin from the Fire Emblem series, you'll be able to use them with the game for some extra goodies. Let's just hope that Nintendo just makes more of those figures, okay? Alright, let's return to our playlist. Here's a new track from Boom Boom Satellites, who just released the album Shine Like a Billion Suns. From that record is Overcome. Thank you.
Alright. This next song is also another original. The song is called Bitter. And as you can tell from the title, as you know from the title, Bitter, it's probably a bitter song.
That's sweet.
Let's just say my ex-wife doesn't like it. Give me back my confidence. Give me back my self-esteem. Give me back all of the youthful whims that I used to dream. Give me back my pewter wishing jar. Just take this bucket list. I'll never even finish it with all the time I've been. Old granddad's gold and silver pocket watch. Give me back my Dodge Dart swinger. I built that car from the ground. Give me back all of the things you stole when no one was around. Give me back my broken, battered heart. I'll wear it like a scar. Give me back the $50 you stole off me at the bar. Give me back my best friend Derek is left with him in my own bed.
This version was recorded live at Akasaka Crawfish. For more info, check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/AngryMcFinn and the Old Yank. You know, I think Angry McFinn would be great pals with my guest here today, Phil the Issues Guy.
Yeah.
We're both angry like individuals. We both go into fits of rage when things happen that we don't like.
Yes.
But I have Phil here because he is one of the biggest experts I know when it comes to The Legend of Zelda. And it was recently announced from the Wall Street Journal that Netflix is working with Nintendo on a live-action Legend of Zelda TV series.
Ooh, it sounds exciting. And Evan, thank you for the great introduction. I'm not sure if I'm so much. I just want to clarify my expertness, yes, of Zelda. Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody that is so bogged down in the facts and can remember everything. All I can say is that I've played every single Zelda game, and I've beaten every single Zelda game.
That makes you an expert.
I guess that makes me an expert, yes. I was going to say, with the exception of Adventures of Link, I cheated. I used cheat code type things to beat that game because at the time I found it rather difficult. But that's a different, we could go whole podcast.
Let me tell you something, man. I don't know a single person who didn't use cheat codes to beat Adventures of Link.
Yeah, if you did not use cheat codes, you're an expert video game player. You're like the kid in that movie, The Wizard, and you should be going to the Nintendo World Championships.
I believe that it's a qualification for becoming the United States president. You have to have beaten the Adventures of Link without any cheat codes. I think it's like rule number 34 under section 3.
Yes, we can, Evan. Yes, we can. I was very interested in hearing the news, and I know we're not going to talk about this subject specifically, but I also want to mention I'm even more excited and interested in the news a few months ago that came out about Nintendo working with Sony on developing a possible Super Mario Brothers video game movie, which is very exciting to me as well on a different level. But yes, we're talking about The Legend of Zelda here. And yes, the Netflix has announced, I believe the story came out through the Wall Street Journal. Yes. Was the story was initially broken?
Yes, the Wall Street Journal. And my question is, why now? Because I know Nintendo has been very hesitant of bringing their properties to TV and movies, especially ever since the debacle of the 1993 Super Mario Bros. Movie, which, by the way, I will say this, I will be completely honest with you, I love the Super Mario Bros. Movie, because it's the only way they could have done it without it making looking goofy and silly in a live-action format.
I tend to agree with you on some levels. I feel like there are certain things they could have done to even more go over the top in the direction that they went to make it even more ridiculous. I feel like some of the choices they made were a little iffy on how they had some of the power-ups come into play, but I do enjoy, and I think it's underrated, the style in which that they created a world.
Yes.
I think they were very successful with that in the same way that Demolition Man was, as another movie of that era that kind of showed.
It was like a family-friendly version of Demolition Man in some areas.
In some ways, in that particular area that they were examining, and I like the whole concept of the world being split into two dimensions where the dinosaurs, instead of the monkeys, grew. I mean, for my guilty pleasure enjoyment sake of a movie, ridiculous and all, I liked it and I thought it was a pretty decent thing. I mean, it wasn't as horrible as, say, like, if we want to talk the Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter video game movie.
Or
the Double Dragon movie. If we want to get into video game adaptations.
I still can't believe I paid $8 to see Double Dragon in the movie theater.
I paid $6.75 or $7.50 or whatever it was to see Street Fighter 2 in the theater. I'm sorry. I'll admit it right now. This is like we're at a video game movie anonymous club, meaning my name is Phil and I paid to see the Super Mario Brothers movie. So why now, to answer your question in a roundabout sort of way? I think now is Nintendo's in a position where they seem to be wanting to experiment with this. That's tend to be why I brought up the Sony Mario issue as well. It seems like they're a little bit more open to the idea.
Can we just state that this is them working with Sony Pictures? Working with Sony.
No,
Mario's
no.
never going to be on a PlayStation console, so get that thought out of your head.
No. Unless they made a Super Mario Brothers, the video game movie, the game, or something like that, maybe. But even then, it probably wouldn't happen.
No, probably wouldn't.
Probably wouldn't happen, no.
It wouldn't be happening. But by the way, just on a completely side note, then to the point that it's ridiculous. There was a Street Fighter video game that was Street Fighter the movie, the video game that had all.
Yes, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. Horrible. One of the worst representations of the Street Fighter 2, and there were billions of them. So why now? I think Nintendo sees that there is money to be made in this kind of television, and I think Netflix. In threat to some arguments I might make later, Netflix has proven themselves as a good place to let someone grow and that they can get some good creative people behind some work that's going to come out there. So perhaps Nintendo's working with a decent creative team. I am dubious, and we'll get into that. I think in the couple of times that Nintendo's tried to do the visual thing, I think it's worked better for Mario than it has for Zelda in the past, simply because of just the nature of Mario being a little bit more ridiculous and being a little bit more open to what you can play with visual elements.
Absolutely.
With the Zelda thing, I'm just concerned. I'll leave it that for now.
Okay, because here's the thing. Because the thing I like about Netflix is with them doing a show on there, that gives them time to work with the scripts, with the characters, with the actors, the settings and such, and the editing and the CGI. Rather than having to do like a season every year on TV, you would think that the networks would have to rush them to get it all done. But I feel like Netflix will give them enough time to work with, you know, the series, maybe at least the first season, and then if other seasons get added on, Netflix will say, hey, look, take your time with this, don't rush it, I know you'll have it ready when it's ready, and when it is, boom, all 13 episodes will be up there.
My big question, though, and this comes as we'll find more information about it, and we'll get into this a little bit more as we go, but who is going to be behind making this? Who is the audience that they're designing this from? I know we do have a quote about that later that I want to get into, and that's a big central point of my argument why I'm afraid of this happening.
And so we'll definitely get into that next question.
Okay, we're going to get into that in a second here then. But who is this show for, and who is doing it? Is Nintendo going to be the producers themselves on it? Are they going to hire a creative team behind the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Nickelodeon series or something like that? Are they going to hire somebody? Is it complete live action? Obviously, there has to be some elements of CGI mixed in there, too. Are we thinking this is going to be but real life? Like, is this is live action, right?
Yes.
This is complete live action. Okay. So it's very, very scary. To me, some of the scarier points are, how are you going to, before we get into that other subject, how are you going to visually represent some of the most important aspects? I think someone like Zelda, for instance, is absolutely no problem portraying a visual element of Zelda. I think you have two huge problems that are sticking right off the screen with Link and Ganon. I think those are two of the harder visual representations from video games to put live with real actors playing the parts or costumes. I mean,
I would say Ganondorf, you could easily get some fantastic makeup jobs to get that done. But when it comes to Link, it's tough because you've never really heard him speak. And as soon as he speaks his first like line, everyone is going to judge that actor, whoever's going to play them.
What kind of voice do you want him to have, Evan? And when you close your eyes, what kind of voice do you want Link to have? How do you want Link to look? Do you? Because I gotta say, I've seen a lot of really excellent cosplay Legend of Zelda.
Absolutely.
The ones that have more impressed me, though, were the Zeldas and the Ganondorfs. I've seen very few. I've seen a couple, but there was one in a very excellent fan-made film that came out a couple of years ago, but very rarely have I seen visual representations of Link not looking a little on the cheesy side. They're going to really have to work to make him look badass with an actor playing him.
So, I remember when years ago they were trying to get something related to Zelda off the ground, and the first person that really came to mind that I could picture doing a good job was Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, he might be too old now.
That's why I think he wouldn't be able to do it. If they do maybe a season later on where it's a much older Link,
You just touched upon another question, and these are all questions that are important as we go forward. And I'm not saying I'm negative about this. I'm just, I guess, dubious is the best word to say. I'm unsure. I want to like it, but I don't want to just say because it's Zelda. Because it's Zelda, I'm holding it at a higher standard than I would
The Zelda franchise is so high in the pedestal when it comes to video games. Like, yes. Practically all of Nintendo's IPs are high in the pedestal. You got Super Mario, you got Zelda, you got Metroid, you've got Kirby, you've got everybody, basically. Heck, I'm already, even the game hasn't even come out yet, but I'm already putting Splatoon on some sort of pedestal.
No,
because I'm expecting some really good things from that.
Everyone's already expecting a Splatoon character to be in the next Smash Brothers game. They're already, you know, in the boards where people are talking about guarantees for the next Smash Brothers, high money's on the Splatoon character.
And I would like to see that maybe as a DLC character.
It would be interesting. The different subject, different rabbit hole. But Sakurai has been very, very vague and very negative upon the idea of any future DLC other than the Mewtwo edition. But we'll wait to see about that. He's only said that he will not be involved in it. That doesn't mean Nintendo couldn't take some of the other members of his team to work on doing things like that.
Exactly.
He's just stated that I do not want to be a part of that. And I love you. You've done so much great for the video game industry and so much great for Smash Brothers. But if you don't want to work on that, you're not the only one in the crew that can design characters.
Exactly.
I'll happily have someone else implement the ice climbers and then anybody else that wants to come in. And then I'll be happy with the greatest Smash Brothers of all time. But again, that's a different topic. With the Zelda thing, in the voice, I also agree with the voice thing you mentioned. I asked you, what do you want his voice to sound like? Where do we want Link to start off as an age? Is he going to be a kid? When is this going to be set in the timeline? Zelda's story structure, like the story, and that'll be getting to a different, when I talk a little bit about some of my qualms about this, the story structure aspect of Zelda, story's never been a super important thing. The stories are very formulaic, but the timeline is extremely important in Zelda. When in the timeline is this series going to be set?
Exactly. That's a question I'm going to ask later on when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Right. And just to finish off, also, when will this game be associated with a new Zelda game? Will it just be a... Will it have some... Will it be a general Zelda game with some elements of all the storylines? Or will it be based on the Zelda Wii U game and coincide with the release of that and be kind of a piggyback of that storyline? That would be interesting to see that.
Mm. Now, one of the things there, and I think this is what you were going to touch about, the words of a family-friendly Game of Thrones.
Oh my God. Every time I read that, and when you just said it, I literally almost just, literally in the new sense, the added definition of the word literally, which means, like highly figuratively.
Yeah.
But literally, I almost want to get up and go to the toilet and throw up. I'm sorry. And
there's nothing Game of Thrones about Zelda.
And there's nothing family... And if you stripped Game of Thrones, and I'm not just talking about the television series, I'll make it clear that I'm a huge fan of the book series and of the television series, and now also of the Game of Thrones video game series by Telltale, which has a member of George R. R. Martin's crew working with Telltale on the storyline of this game.
Let me bring this up, too, because I was reading the bio of someone, some actor and stuff, and it had said that... It has somewhat to do with this. It said that as a kid, he acted in a children's play version of the Rocky Horror Show. And the first thing that prompted my mind is like, is it like 5 minutes long?
Yeah. What did they do? They didn't do anything. That's like, okay, my kids, my six-year-olds did a production of Hair, but they came out dressed in winter coats instead of naked, in the scene to symbolize the opposite of oppression.
Is the character's name Garnet? So it's now Garnet, I love you.
But that's the thing. If you stripped everything adult themed about Game of Thrones out of the books and the movies. And I'm not just talking about the sex. Some people might be, oh, yeah, we can deal with the sex. I'm not talking about the sex. I'm talking about the political intrigue, the murder, the espionage, the violence, the just the stories about food that are in the books, the pages and pages that they just describe food. The violence, the inner human turmoil that's there, all of that. None of that is evident in the Legend of Zelda series. It deals with families. What are we going to deal with? House Goron and House Zora? And we're going to have the stone wedding or something? I mean, what's gonna happen? But everyone's, instead of bad things happening, it's going to be, spoiler alert, there's going to be a tea party? Is that what's going to happen? I mean, I don't want to see a family-friendly Game of Thrones Zelda shit. Is that mean some stupid, gosh damn fool that's sitting in a boardroom that goes, you know what? Game of Thrones is really popular. You know why? Well, you know, this Game of Thrones stuff, and they got swords, and they got horses, and they got dragons. You know what? Well, you know, Zelda? Zelda could do that same thing, so we should describe this. I mean, come on, shut up. The two franchises have absolutely zero to do with each other, except for some people use swords in both.
And, you know, it's got that sort of Middle Earth vibe.
Yes, in the style, in a some sense of the style. So, but even still, Zelda's a much more based around magical world. The Game of Thrones world, there is some elements of magic mixed in there, but it's not the forefront of the world and what makes it, what most people enjoy about it. I mean, yeah, the dragons and stuff, and dragons are all magic-y and stuff like that, but even they're based around, you could base them more around, they're an animal and some sort of reference of an animal. In Zelda, you're dealing with prophets and fairies and I don't know, and stone guys that roll around the countryside and magic masks. And
if anything, it has a little bit of more of a resemblance to Lord of the Rings stuff.
Absolutely. But that would be the same person that would just call Game of Thrones and the Lord of the Rings the same thing.
Right. And no, they're totally different things.
Game of Thrones, there's nothing really family friendly at all about Game of Thrones, and I don't think that is a good way to sell the show. In fact, that's one of the things that most upsets me and most gives me an anxiety for the series to happen. This whole family-friendly Game of Thrones thing, because it makes me think that, what are they talking about? What the hell are they? Have they ever watched Game of Thrones? Seriously, strip away everything adult-themed, and again, not just the sex, just everything. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. They could have said, oh, we were trying to do something in the style of that using the Zelda themes, or say, oh, you know the movie, old school movie Willow? We're trying to do something maybe like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be, I could understand it. Willow's a better example of how that could have probably been, they could have tweaked a story like that to be a Zelda story, and it would have, and if it, I think that's a good model for them to base it off of.
Okay, and I totally agree with you, but let's take a short break so you can calm down a little bit.
I don't want to calm down. I'll listen to the music.
Yeah, so when we come back, we'll chat more about Legend of Zelda on Netflix, but first, here's a band called Nico Touches the Walls. They just released an acoustic album entitled Howdy! We are Eiko Touches the Walls, and if you've watched the anime Haikyuu, then you may recognize this track. It's called Tenchi Gaeshi.
Only more. Go,
Takahashi with the sing-along track Simple Song of Freedom from 2010's For You album, a great all-girl soul band you should all check out. And we're back with Phil the Issues Guy, and we are talking about Zelda on Netflix. So yes. My question now for you is, let's say that you were given the opportunity to work on this show. In fact, they make you the showrunner.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
How would you tackle it? Like, which games would you focus on?
Okay. That's a very difficult question, and the first thing I would do would be hire an excellent staff around me of wonderful writers and designers that are smarter than me so I could focus on the general direction of the show. I think what I would do is, especially if you're setting it up like a television series, I would do something of a, not necessarily story of the week, but something different. A few different storylines that were going on at the same time. Maybe even go through the entire Zelda video game catalog and do stories around those periods of time. Particularly the way I'm thinking about this is I'd like to see them do a Majora's Mask story arc, a Link's Awakening story arc, some of these side-off stories of Link that I think are the ones that are more conducive to visual medium of storytelling. I think some of the bigger Zelda games aren't necessarily so conducive. So if you had a whole story based around one of them, I think you would pigeonhole yourself into some problems. I think if you kept it open that, depending on which week you tune in, you might see, or maybe even the way the show was structured in acts in smaller bits, like 15, 20 minute segments and shows, you could set it up that you had a lot of the different games built in one episode. Like you could have a sailing episode that was based around Wind Waker and then have something that is more based around The Adventures of Link or something later on, and then have a whole Majora's Mask episode dedicated to the whole storyline around that. I think that would be the direction I would go, because I think if you pick one style, it becomes dangerous. And then because if it doesn't work, if we don't like our Link, you could even change up who's playing the characters, change up the complete style and go with whatever the style of the video game with the style and the theme that you go with. I think that's...
Because depending on which story arc you're following in the video game, it's a different Link each time.
Exactly. And maybe one of the Links is a silent Link, just for fun. That's just what's the first thing that comes to my mind. I tend to think that, yeah, that didn't necessarily work before when they were doing a shorter segment show like the Super Mario.
With the, excuse me, princess!
We need to throw it in at least once.
Yep.
But I do feel like if they did something now, there's a lot of really talented people that would love to work on Legend of Zelda episodes. And I think that gets around to some of the problems that you have where you don't have to have a writer's group create stories for the world of The Legend of Zelda, because the big stories are, unless each story just revolves around one giant quest, like one episode is Link proceeding through one dungeon, then another episode is Link proceeding through another dungeon. I mean, I would like to see that set up almost like the Pokemon television show, where Ash is going from city to city and having to find the Pokemon trainer and battle them and going through all that. But I don't think that's what they're going to try to do with The Legend of Zelda. I have a feeling they're going to try to go long arching story arc with some political intrigue with Ganon and Zelda down at King's Landing, Hyrule Castle. And it seems to me that from and I know we don't know anything, but from that quote, I'm going back to it, family-friendly Game of Thrones, it makes me think that it's a longer story arc that they're going to be going for.
But the thing for me is that these video games are already so long that you could practically fit an entire season based off of one game.
Absolutely. And I think that's a bigger problem that we have in video games to visual adaptations, that unfortunately, when someone goes in the Hollywood whatever, who's a what's it happens, they can't just take the storyline that's in a video game and try to make that into a visual movie. They outsmart themselves.
Try to fit like a 30-hour game, or let's use an example, a 16-hour game like The Last of Us, which is currently being turned into a film. How are you going to fit all 16 hours into a 2.5-hour film? Because there's so much important stuff that happens during that whole 16 hours that nothing can be excluded.
Evan, I'll do you one better. Think about this. Think about the world of Final Fantasy. I'm not a huge fan, but I know out there we have some super diehards that are listening probably right now, and I love you for it. You guys are a passionate fan base. You guys were all excited. They're going to do a movie, a CG movie that looked beautiful. They're going to do a Final Fantasy movie. So much lore to go back on. So many hours of amazing story to tap into that they could have made a movie out of. What'd they do? They did something that has nothing to do with anything, and they called it Final Fantasy for some fucking reason. And
exactly.
And that's the biggest problem that people have had. Not in the Super Mario Brothers movie we were talking about in the first part of our segment, in our first segment.
Because at least it had Mario and Luigi and King Koopa and Princess Toadstool and Yoshi. It had the characters.
It had the characters, and it had something to do with the Mario world, even if it wasn't the perfect representation of it. It had some element of that aspect. It said at least you had a feeling like the creators of the movie weren't just plastering the name on to get all the fans of the franchise into the audience. They actually looked at it and go, oh, how are we going to do this? And I kind of wish they had gone, as we said before, I wish they had gone more in that direction. And The Legend of Zelda, though, out of everything that's... I do think some aspects of it do lend itself to a visual medium, and I think they could do it well. I'm just fearful they need the right people working on it. They really do need the right
people. And I do think it's a better idea that they're doing a TV series, because that way they don't have to cut anything away. They don't have to worry about trying to fit a 2.5, even 3-hour movie. Or in the case of a Zelda game, let me use the example of Link Between Worlds, which took me 15 hours to beat, and that was just for the story mode alone. They don't have to worry about cutting they don't have to worry about cutting 12, 13 hours out of that. They could just actually focus an hour each for 15 episodes based off of just Link Between Worlds.
The only problem I foresee is this series, to do it correct, is going to cost a lot of money. And I know Nintendo does have the money to produce this, but to do it right and get everything to look so crisp and clean, it's going to cost a lot, and they're going to be willing to fully commit to it. And I hope they don't cut corners on other sides in where they hire writers and directors and the proper actors to do this. And I know Netflix is an interesting place to be doing it, where they do give a lot of autonomy to their creators and they give them a good place to create art. I think that's created some hits and some misses from Netflix.
Right. And I don't know but when it comes to budget, I think Netflix can back that sort of thing, because if you look at something like Marco Polo, that show is gorgeous to watch.
It is gorgeous, but that was kind of what I'm talking about. I think it looks great, and I think the action's great. I think they direct what's going on great, but I think the stories suck, and it doesn't quite carry me through like some other series that are in the similar vein, like Vikings or...
Another great show. I would have preferred them saying a family-friendly version of Vikings over family-friendly Game of Thrones.
Yeah, because at least Vikings, you can understand the basic concept from A to B and what's going on, and you could see a Zelda-type thing where someone starts in a small village and expands themselves as they see the rest of the world. I think Vikings is excellent. And I think Marco Polo looks excellent. And if Zelda looks like that, I'll be very happy. I agree with you. Netflix does have the money. I just think it's going to be expensive.
Yeah, because here's what I'm envisioning. I'm envisioning a season, a game per season. So maybe like season one can be Ocarina of Time, because I feel like that's a great origin story to start off on.
Absolutely.
And then season two can go straight into Majora's Mask.
It could go right into Majora's Mask, and then we could sort of have a passage of time, mm-hmm. and then have the whole story about how the world was flooded, and then get into the new Link and get into Wind Waker.
Right. Well, I was thinking that could be sort of like the last season, because I'm thinking if we want to just have the same actor playing Link and same actress playing Zelda, I'm thinking Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and I know I'm going to be messing around with the timeline here, but then have something like Link Between Worlds be season mm-hmm. 3, Skyward Sword be season 4, because that's like Link in his teenage years, mm-hmm. and then Twilight Princess, and then maybe the next one could be sort of like the Wind Waker being the next generation of Zelda.
Twilight Princess is another storyline that would be very interesting to see them do some of that in a visual medium. I think there is some elements of Twilight Princess would be very successful in a television show. And then they could do Wind Waker. I would like to see at some point, that's why I guess I'd like to see some short clips. I'd love to see something based around the original Legend of Zelda. But that being said, I've heard a lot of rumors as it's getting closer that Zelda Wii U is in its way connected to the original Legend of Zelda. So we'll see how that develops.
Very cool.
So maybe that will be connected to that. So
all right, so here's my question for you.
Uh-oh.
Because I know it'll be hard figuring out for Link and Zelda. Who would you cast?
Oh, this is tough. You can't do this to me now. Who would I cast as Link and Zelda? Okay. Oh shit. It's hard because
I feel like you need to choose like two new up and coming actors.
You're absolutely new up and coming actors, or it begs the question that we asked way earlier. The main question, what age are we starting these two? What age is this series starting? If it's starting in Ocarina of Time and they're going to start out as kids, then we need to look to kids to be doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if I know young actors well enough to do this.
Probably at Zelda, one of the actresses maybe from the Matilda musical or something like that.
Yeah, and do we have any recent Dennis and the Menace recently?
No, I can't think of like any of the young kids who could play someone like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Link thing is you need a kid that's earnest. You need somebody that's. You need a very good actor if you're going to cast a young person. If you're going to cast Link as a young teen, maybe that guy that was in the movie Whiplash recently, Miles.
Him, yes.
He could probably play a very good Link. He's got that doe-eyed thing and can play innocent really well. If every other part that he's played besides the Whiplash part.
Or even that kid from Boyhood, the one that you actually watch age as the movie progressed.
Absolutely, that's another great pick. Joffrey Baratheon could probably be. No, I'm kidding. But he could not be Link. But he could be Ganon.
Speaking of Ganon, for some reason, I know it's kind of touching back in Game of Thrones, but I can picture Sean Bean being a pretty good Ganon.
Interesting, very interesting. I was thinking to hark back to I'm harking back to something else as well. Gladiator. For some reason, the first person to pop into my mind was Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know why. He's
got the nose. He has the nose, I think.
Him in a long shot, but a lesser known actor. He played. I'm trying to remember his name as I'm saying it. His name's Kim Coates. He's on the show Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, he was in the Resident Evil movie.
Yes, he was. Awesome. Yes, I believe for whatever reason.
He's got the beard. He's got the face for it.
He's got the face for Ganon. He also plays evil, really sly, well, and has sort of a comedic tone and a raspy enough voice when he plays it up. He would be on my short list for Ganon's.
Mm-hmm. All right,
but I think with Ganon you could get away with also casting a much older actor. For some reason, I think that they'd go the old British route for Ganon. I just have a weird feeling. They go someone in the Harry Potter catalog for Ganon.
Well, you know, the person who plays Hagrid could probably do it.
Didn't he just recently pass away?
No, he's still alive and kicking.
Okay, who did? Didn't someone from the Harry Potter universe just recently kick?
I can't remember.
Okay, let me look this up. But
I know Michael Gambon is still alive.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. Underreported. Did we start a death hoax here? I'm sorry.
All right, how about, let's say they do Majora's Mask. Who would you put as Skull Kid?
Okay, that's very, very interesting. I know this is, this is kind of piggybacking on other recent casting of him, but, why am I,
Because here's what I was thinking. I was thinking Dev Patel.
Ooh, that is very interesting casting choice. I was thinking our new Joker, Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Really?
Maybe.
Well, you know what? After what was that movie that he just did where he plays the guy that he's like going around town trying to find news stories, a Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler. Not Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm not. Who the fuck am I talking about? Is Jake Gyllenhaal the new Joker? No, he isn't. Jared Leto. Jared Leto. I'm thinking of Skull Kid.
After seeing his performance in Midnight Buyers Club, he has a lot of range and he could probably do it. But just as long as 30 Seconds to Mars doesn't do the soundtrack for the show.
No, okay? Absolutely not. But that being said, I could honestly see them doing the Skull Kid with somebody that comes from the world of ballet, someone that comes from the world of dance, and really just somebody that is almost mummified. That's why I don't want it to be family friendly. I think in certain aspects of Zelda, you could go the dark route, especially with, I think Zelda works both ways. And I think in the games, people tend to, one of the complaints about something like Twilight Princess was a lot of people called it too dark. Some of the few people that complain about Majora's Mask call it too dark. But I think when you're dealing with a visual medium, and that's what goes to our biggest question of all, as we were talking about this before, who are they doing this show for? And I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit, but like, if they're going for a wide audience and they're going for adults, I think you need to see, especially in stories, like if you do something like the Majora's Mask story, you have to look to some other shows that go dark. And again, I'm going to mention the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Nickelodeon story, who recently in this past season dealt with a whole month of these, what was originally, because of a scheduling conflict, got pushed back, was supposed to be a Halloween month, of dealing with these dark horror stories on Nickelodeon with show for kids that were actually pretty shocking and pretty frightening. If they do it right by actually not selling your audience short and really pushing the limit. Someone like the Skull.
Well, remember what they got away with in the movie Where the Wild Things Are for a PJ film.
Absolutely. I think you need to go in that direction and really kind of, and I'm not talking about Super Bowl commercial depressing people with kids.
Oh, God, no.
But I think you need to shock and scare kids. You need to really make kids afraid of Ganon. You
yes.
can't just make him some goofy,
right?
And I'm not talking about,
which is when you said the comedic thing. I kind of like, there's nothing comedic about Ganon whatsoever.
No. But you need to. He needs to have this, like, I guess what I meant is more a comedic way of enjoying the darkness that he's causing.
Right. So, which is why, as much as the hated character Tingle is, that's why I kind of like him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Who, by the way, if anyone was to play Tingle, I want Ricky Gervais to do it.
After seeing him in Galavant, I could definitely.
Yes, that's what's exactly what I was thinking. Either if he can't do it, maybe Rip Taylor.
Okay, Galavant's a great example, and I know that's something that you, I think, enjoyed a little bit more than
I loved Galavant. I thought that was fantastic.
I thought all the cameos in Galavant were great, and I think some of the style of it was decent, but what I didn't like the two leads that they had cast, but that's a different story altogether, and I didn't like the main theme song that they carried through the whole thing. My highlight, of course, is Weird Al as the monk, and that same episode, and Ricky Gervais later in that episode as well, were my highlights of the series.
Yes.
But I think that's a good model of how Zelda in basic could look in some ways. I just hope that they don't stereotype things like they did a little bit in Galavant. And I have the same problem with Galavant I have with Mel Brooks' Men in Tights there, Robin Hood Men in Tights. It's just a little too stocky at times. Some of the songs were a little too, you just turned on GarageBand and played the musical background and sang to it a little bit. But that being said, I hope, and this is just all my opinion.
Right.
I feel like I hope they don't do the same thing with Zelda and just like canned fantasy element. I hope they really design the world unique to the Legend of Zelda and look at the games and try to give us a visual representation of what that looks like, not just go, stock fantasy environment. Okay, let's use this.
I have a good feeling that if this all happens, Nintendo is going to be watching production of this like a hawk.
Yeah.
Because people know, the fans know, that if they screw this up, Nintendo's never going to trust anybody again with their properties.
Absolutely. Nintendo knows, and if Nintendo knows, that if you fuck up the show, they will never go Galavant. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, that. I agree with you 100%, Evan. This
This and this little Sony Entertainment experience, as I'll clarify too, I just want to say Sony because it makes me happy to say Sony's making a Mario game. But Sony Entertainment thing, these two experiments, I think, if these two both fail, and by fail, I don't mean if the Legend of Zelda series is regarded pretty well but doesn't get a big enough audience and goes off the air. I don't think that's right. What I mean. But if it gets lauded, if it gets called the worst piece of shit in the world that's ever come on Netflix, I was going to say one of the bad things, but forget it. just in case, I don't want to alienate the one person that likes the show I'm about to shit on. But if it gets called one of the worst series, if it gets laughed at in the same way that the every other attempt that seemed to happen, every other video game movie attempt has happened, or film adaptation, then I think we're done for and we'll never see it again, or it'll be another 20, 30 years before we see it again.
Yeah. Because I remember also years ago they were trying to do a Metroid movie and that never came into fruition.
I think in some ways that's the easiest.
Yeah, it is.
Wouldn't you think so? That like just a simple movie, well, not simple, but it almost writes itself. You could almost.
The thing that really kind of turned me off as a kid when they were announcing it is, all right, first and foremost, the thing that didn't turn me off, Shannon Elizabeth as Samus, I was okay with that because I thought Shannon Elizabeth was hot and so was Samus. But I didn't like the fact that she would have been teaming up again with the American Pie people to make Metroid because that just doesn't mesh with me.
No. That's mixing mediums that don't necessarily work. Like as much as I like some elements of it, everything not Seth Rogen about it. It's like Seth Rogen's team doing the Green Hornet. It just, for me, it just didn't quite
right.
work.
And I didn't enjoy the Green Hornet.
I thought it was a capable movie, and I thought...
It was. I like the serious parts were good, but when they attempted comedy, it just fell flat.
It fell flat. That's what I was going to say. The best part of the movie was the action segments with Kato and how they were all filmed. I thought Seth Rogen's production team did a kick-ass job the way they filmed
and
it.
And I love the director. I love Michel Gondry. I think Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is one of the best films I've ever seen in my life. But I feel like he was really miscast when it came to a director.
Yep, absolutely, for that movie particularly. And I think that's a similar example of what we're talking about here when you have people... It just doesn't work sometimes when you have certain matchups.
Now, who do you think, going to the question that you're keep asking about this, who do you think that the show should be for? Should it be for the people that have been playing the games for a long time? Should it be for those who have never heard of Zelda and want to be introduced to the world of Zelda? Or should it be a mixture of both?
You know what, Evan, to answer your question, I think I'm going to answer your question with a statement of and add to your question of also, who do I want to lead this? I think Nintendo should hire Bruce Timm to lead this. And Bruce Timm is the person that's in charge of the Warner Brothers animated universe that gave you the Batman animated series.
I thought he resigned from there.
He did, and that's why he's available. Hire him because... Because what he figured out was what I think is the most successful way of doing this. Doing it, to answer your question, do it for everybody.
Yes.
What he did with the Batman animated series and what he did with Justice League and what he did even, you could say, as far with shows like Static Shock and Batman Beyond as it got more kid-oriented, but still...
What I still liked about the shows was it was still dark. It was still grimy. It dealt with issues that even today you don't really see on children's TV show. You can't see if they did Batman the Animated Series now, there would be nothing about the Joker in the insane asylum talking about how his father used to beat him.
Nothing about episodes with Scarecrow making Bruce Wayne go insane. Nothing about the episodes like even in Justice League as far as that, like the Royal Flush Club, the Royal Flush Gang, and the episode where they chased Joker to Vegas. The Joker just... Mark Hamill's Joker would never have existed.
No, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't. And that's why I think that, especially if you're dealing with a Netflix series where you could push the envelope a little bit for kids and still have to be kids, somebody like Bruce Timm or somebody in that vein, he's just the name that comes to mind when I think about what, to answer your question, what I think needs to be done with this series.
Yes.
Do all of the above of what you said. And I think that's the hardest part.
And here's a suggestion too. Like, even bring in, I don't know what you think of this show, But when it comes to, like, fantasy and stuff, if you can grab a couple of the writers from the Adventure Time team and bring them over to Zelda, yeah. I think they could do a great job with that. Because when it comes to Adventure Time, that show is really dark, if you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Get the Adventure Time writers, get one or two Buffy writers that aren't working right now, get them in on it too. Like, I'm being 100% fucking serious. And you get Bruce Timm heading that shit, and you got something. You have a freaking team.
Here are your Golden Globes. Here are your Emmys for Legend of Zelda.
Exactly. That's how you do it correct. But I have a feeling it's hard for me to think about why things like that, if things like that haven't been done since till now, why is it going to happen now? Is this just the definition of insanity of if we keep hoping for these video game adaptations wherever they be? And a lot of people will point out, oh, Mortal Kombat movie, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad.
That was the only exception to the rule.
That's the one they got. Yeah, Evan, that's the one they got. When you go, oh, Wreck-It Ralph was good. Wreck-It Ralph wasn't a video game movie. I mean, it was, but it wasn't the same thing.
Right.
Yes, the Mario sections, when we saw the real characters, it was awesome, but they were nothing more than cameos, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got COD kind of thing. Yeah, we got Candy Crush sort of thing, but it wasn't, like, and I don't mean people like, Phil, come on, what are you fucking kidding me? Wreck-It Ralph's totally a video game movie. And I know it's a video game.
It is a movie that takes place in a video game realm.
But
it's not a video game movie.
But Phil, there's been a Wreck-It Ralph video game since then, so doesn't that count? No!
No, it's a movie tie-in!
It doesn't count! So when people look for their success stories, it's more like, yeah, I have a guilty pleasure for the Super Mario Brothers movie. I can watch the Street Fighter movie and be like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen, but still go, wow, Raul Julia's acting is still top notch in this piece of shit. Wow. How do you do this? This is his last role. God, there is no God. You know? I mean, I can do that. But when it comes down to it, if that and saying, oh, the Mortal Kombat movie isn't too bad, if those are your two go-tos, or the second Final Fantasy movie is, if there is one, wasn't as bad as the first one. Or, I mean, those are the best I've heard. Maybe I'm missing one that I'm not thinking of.
You know what? I will say Lara Croft Tomb Raider. The first one I thought was pretty good.
Okay, I'll go with you there. That wasn't that bad.
No, Cradle of Life was terrible.
Oh, yeah. That was bad.
I paid $10 to see that in the theaters.
I honestly had forgot about the Tomb Raider movie. I blocked out of my mind for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a pretty good one. But for the most part, if we're dealing with, and let's just say at, I don't know, I don't have the statistic in front of me, but let's say there's been, would you say there's been 100 attempts, 50 attempts? How many video game movies altogether do you think there are? Speculation.
Look at Uwe Boll's entire filmography and get back to me.
But you know what I mean? Like big budget things that have tried to do things like this.
Right, and right now they're starting to film the Assassin's Creed movie. And mm-hmm. I have no idea how that's going to be.
Yeah, I think that's one that there's a hope. There's a hope for that one.
Because I like Michael Fassbender. I think he's a fantastic actor. If you've ever seen him in the movie Frank, it shows how good he can do without even having to see his face throughout the whole thing.
Do we count? Could there be like, I would love to see like an Ace Attorney Netflix series.
Well, considering how great Takashi Miike did with the movie, it's possible.
I mean, there's certain franchises, like, it seems like some of the ones that would make the best movies, they just don't go to those
wells. I would say Professor Layton. I think that would make a great...
Those type of things would be excellent, excellent movie-based video games if you went in those directions. I think necessarily picking some of the bigger franchises because you want to have the install base to go sit in the theaters is not the best way to pick the proper licenses to try to turn into visual properties, because I think there are some that are just built for it that just haven't been attempted because of whatever reason, because they're lesser known games.
Absolutely. Now my final question for you is this, like, because this has just been reports that this game, that this TV series is happening. It hasn't been officially announced.
I know.
When do you think the reveal will be?
This goes to, I'm so bad at answering questions. When do I think the reveal will be? I think if it's real, you might see it at E3. You might see Nintendo make word of it.
around the time that they show even more Zelda video game footage, or you might then hear about it closer to the release of Zelda Wii U. But my real question is, was this report to the Wall Street Journal a leak from Nintendo to try to test people's response to it? That's what I'm curious.
That's a good question.
Is this whole thing to gauge public reaction? Because Nintendo's got to be tiptoeing on the ice here across the pond with this whole thing, because they have two, like we mentioned this a bunch earlier, so we don't have to go into this again. This is some very sacred ground that they're going on, and they screwed this up. Every time they've licensed out Zelda to other people, it has not gone too well. And yes, I am looking at you, CDI Games as well.
Yep. The only time Link has ever talked, and it is the worst experience ever.
Yeah, that and the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. Horrible, dude. Horrible.
See, the only good things about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show was when he had Captain Lou Albano and the other guy whose name I can't remember as Mario and Luigi. If they had made Super Mario Brothers as a full-on live-action sitcom the way they did that, it would be okay.
Absolutely. And part of the problem was in the cartoon. It was just, you know, that stock cartoon around at that time. But I didn't mind the Super Mario Brothers cartoon that bad. Some of the episodes were relatively interesting. And it was silly.
I used to have the Magic Carpet episode on VHS, the one that actually has Steppenwolf playing in the background.
My biggest problem, though, is that was an awesome episode. My biggest problem with it was kind of the opposite of what you say. I really love the live action stuff with Captain Lou Albano and the other guy who's also a pretty famous actor. I'm just blanking on his name right now. We both are. But I did not like them as the voice actors of the cartoon. I feel like as off putting
as they did the voices for the cartoon. I think they only did the live action. I think they did only the live action stuff. They chose totally different people to do the.
Then I hated whoever did the voices of the Mario show. I have to look this up.
Yeah,
Super Mario Brothers Super Stars.
Because Captain Lou Albano was awesome as Mario.
Yeah, he was awesome, and I just remember hating the voices of the cartoons.
Because what I liked about the live action Mario parts was it felt like you were watching two real-life plumbers just bantering back and
forth. Just hanging out. Yeah, exactly. So Mario was Lou Albano, 65 episodes. Danny Wells was Luigi.
That's okay.
And no, we have it just says, it doesn't have anyone else as Mario. It says Lou Albano as Mario and Danny Wells.
Because it doesn't sound like Lou Albano in the cartoons.
Maybe that's the problem. And again, that was going to go, let me make my point, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. My point was that because they had these two actors, and one being a wrestler actor, doing voiceovers as well, they were very outgoing and very believable as Mario and Luigi in the live-action stuff, even as silly as it was as a kid. But in the cartoon voices, if, as my speculation here, they were the ones doing the voices, I don't think they were good voice actors, and I think that's a prime example of why you should have.
It looks like they were both in the animated version too, and maybe the problem with that was with them being in a live action little aspect, they had the chance to emote better in the live action part.
I was doing an interview. I was talking to Ernie Hudson, and I asked him an honest question. He's answered this question on many occasions, and when I got a chance to talk to him, I asked him this question as well. Is it true that when you were on the Ghost, when they announced they were going to do the Ghostbusters cartoon, you auditioned for the part to do the voice for the Ghostbusters? And he said, yes, that's true. And I go, is it also true that they did not give you the part and they cast Arsenio Hall instead? And he said, that's absolutely true. I went in and read for Winston. They said, you don't sound good enough as Winston. He goes, what do you mean? I am Winston. And he said, Arsenio Hall called him up and said, I'm sorry. They told me they want me to do the part. Is that okay? And he said, that's okay. And him and Arsenio, he said, yeah, he really appreciated Arsenio calling him and asking him. And that's part of the reason why he's still friends with him today. But he said he was like really pissed off about it. But it goes to show that Ernie Hudson became an excellent voice actor. He did a lot of work later on. But at the time, you can't necessarily be an actor and a voice actor. They're two very different skill sets. And Lou Albano might have been very good as a wrestler and very good playing Mario live action, but as a cartoon voice, they should have hired some really good voice actor to do the voice of Mario. Right. And I think that would have, and a really good voice actor to do all the voices on that show. I think part of the reason why it sucked was John Stoker, or whatever, Stalker, doing the voice of Toad sucked.
Oh.
He sounds like Tweety Bird in a garbage disposal.
Pretty, pretty rabbit.
I guess to wrap it up, when do I think I have a feeling that if this is real, I think the public outcry that's come from this, if this is a test by Nintendo to take the temperature of the public, I think it's been relatively positive. I think I'm probably in the somewhat minority of being somewhat cautious of this. Most people are like, oh, this
so
sounds.
So you're more cautiously optimistic.
I'm cautious.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that it's happening and that Nintendo's giving this chance. I won't be anything until I find out more about who's behind it. Right now, just hearing that Netflix and Nintendo are in talks to do a Zelda series has me curious. I'm curious. To describe, if I could sum our whole two segments here down to one word, I'm curious, Evan. I can't wait to talk to you about this in a few months when we learn more.
And I can't wait to hear more info on this as well, because as a Zelda fan, lifelong Zelda fan, this is really exciting for me. I'm hoping that if this is real, they do it right. And if not, I guess we'll never see anything Nintendo related in other media whatsoever.
Evan, one last question before we wrap up.
Yes.
Do you think that if this Zelda series comes out, do you think Nintendo's experiment with the Zelda series for Mario, or do you think a Mario thing will come out before Zelda, or Zelda before Mario?
I think Zelda before Mario.
And you think if Zelda fails, we don't see a Mario?
Yes. I would definitely say that. I would assume that if they see that this doesn't work in the if it doesn't work in a non-video game field, I don't think they'll ever try it with another property. Although, I will say this, because the Super Mario movie that they're working with Sony Pictures is going to be animated, and you can get away with a lot more with animation.
And do you think, I guess my last question for you, Evan, is do you think that they should have gone that route with Zelda, or do you think Zelda's better off like that?
If they had decided to do a Legend of Zelda anime, and it was in the style of that trailer that we saw for Smash Brothers, where it was Link versus
Marth?
I think it was Link versus Marth. If it was in the style of that, I believe it was Studio 4 Degrees Celsius, I may be wrong, that did that. If the people who did that did the Zelda series,
which is what I want, yes,
I think I would be happy, because I feel like that's where it could work in the best possible way.
And Evan, just to piggyback on that a little bit, I think Nintendo has a lot of really talented people working in the Fire Emblem series. that style and the style that they used in all those Smash Brothers interactive movies, that anime movies that they put out. Me not being the biggest anime fan, those are the people that I think Nintendo has in-house could visually design a beautiful Zelda anime. And I'm surprised that they're not going in that direction first to test the market out with response to something like that before going head-on into a full live-action series like this. It does seem a little quick to go from zero to 90 so quick, where they have such great, where it seems like they're hinting with those movies about going into a bigger direction with them, because I think they could do such great stuff, and then you don't have to have Link talk. You fill it up with music and atmosphere.
But I feel like if this works, if Legend of Zelda works, I feel like this could open up to brand new chances within Nintendo. I feel like that'll give, they could give other franchises a go in the animation and movie realm. I mean, look at a game that's coming out in a couple weeks, codenamed Steam. I mean, the craziness of Abraham Lincoln versus aliens, which is what I just discussed in the previous segment. I feel if they could do something, if they can do a codenamed Steam like TV series or miniseries and have Abraham Lincoln beating up things that are not vampires, that could be something really fun to watch.
Yeah, I could get aboard with that. I could definitely get aboard. We already talked about Metroid, obviously, even something like Kid Icarus, they could do something if you go to Upper and all that stuff.
I mean, look at the success that Pokemon has had in the animation.
Yeah, Pokemon. I mean, I guess
that's really the only thing that has succeeded when it comes to a Nintendo
property. We just fell into it. That is that the most successful video game visual adaptation ever is Pokemon.
And it's probably one of the most successful anime series out there. I mean, this show has been going on since 1997, and it shows no sign of stopping.
Nope. No, gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
Pokemon.
Yes. So hopefully they'll strike gold again for Legend of Zelda. If they can have the same success that Pokemon has had with Legend of Zelda, then I think Nintendo is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I don't want it to come off. I'm hoping for the best in this situation, and I really do hope this is a success story, and this is the start of us getting a lot of Nintendo franchises in a lot of maybe even non-Nintendo franchises with Nintendo licensing them into film deals, like talking to Konami and getting a Castlevania movie made, which why it hasn't been made yet, I still don't know. But whatever. I mean, let's get into this. Let's do it. Who owns Konami right now? Is Konami their own company?
Yeah, Konami is their own entity.
Okay, so yeah, but I think Nintendo should help them make a movie. Well, Nintendo should buy them, because I want new Castlevania games.
Well, and that was my point last week with Sega. I think Nintendo should buy Sega. That way they'll have Sonic.
They should have bought Sega a long time ago.
They should have bought Sega a long time ago. And I'll say the same about Capcom as well, because they're kind of in the they're not doing so well either.
But that's the thing, because when you and I know a lot of time has passed and we're living in a different age, but really when you think of those Capcom and Konami games, you think of the Nintendo. A lot of people mistakenly just call those games Nintendo games.
Yeah.
You know, that don't call Castlevania a Nintendo game, or call Contra a Nintendo game, or call Mega Man a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
I think, and to go to Mega Man and Capcom, I think Nintendo would treat Mega Man with so much more respect than Capcom has.
Absolutely, because I feel like Mega Man deserves to be in a company that gives them the love and respect. And for the love and respect that Nintendo gave Mega Man on Super Smash Brothers, that was more love than Capcom has given Mega Man since probably Mega Man 10.
I know they're just one of the companies Nintendo works with or is partnered with, but imagine if Nintendo buys Capcom and then they give the Mega Man property to the people that worked on Tropical Freeze, and they give us like a Mega Man game with that level of
Retro Studios, I think, would do a fantastic job.
Yeah, do an amazing job making a Mega Man game. They did so well with the Donkey Kong Country franchise. I would love to see them work with a franchise like another amazing of the old school side-scrolly hard, because of how difficult Tropical Freeze was, and to add some of those environmental aspects to a Mega Man game and how your character grows so it isn't... I just think they could do an excellent job with the Mega Man game through Nintendo as the conduit. So, I mean, hopefully that stuff will happen.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. But Phil, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race today.
My pleasure, Evan. Thank you so much.
Why don't we do a little of our quick promo stuff, because I think we actually kind of ran out of time on this show.
Okay, awesome. Sorry about that.
No, it's cool. It's cool. I love these long chats. I love these long discussions. That way I can save a few songs for another episode.
Absolutely, and you can always split it into segments as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, guys, if you want to check out my stuff, you can check it out at issuesprogram.com or go to the YouTube page. Phil the Issues Guy, if you search on YouTube. A lot of times what we've been doing over here at Issues Program lately is episode recaps after your favorite television show, whether it be The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones. Oh, we've done Gotham a little bit. We're doing Better Call Saul right now as well.
We do immediate reaction recap podcasts right afterwards, live on YouTube, and you can join in the conversation, tell us what you thought of the episodes as well. And also added to that, we'll be doing some other recap and reviews shows coming up in the near future. So please subscribe, Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Thank you, guys.
All right, so for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.d3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for a friend, Salad Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbashbrigade and facebook.com/landofesh. For all your other geek stuff, go to egmnow.com/electricsister, and don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Ash, including The Electric Sister, Geek Aggro, and of course, The Issues Program. If you are in the Chiba area, check out Uncle Tom's Music Garage happening at the Lifehouse Anga on Friday, February 27th. It'll be Honeydew, Glow in the Forest, In the Air, and Angry McFinn and the Old Yank. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. with the first band coming on at 8. Tickets are 1,000 yen, but only 500 if you bring a student ID. This is one of those moments where I wish I was living in Japan right now.
Link, I'm going to kill you, Link. I'm going to rip you to shreds, you little bastard. The Triforce will be mine.
Phil, thank you again for joining me here on No Borders, No Race.
My pleasure.
Our final song we'll be playing is one of the bands from the Uncle Tom's Music Garage event. This is In the Air with a song from their Till the Dawn EP. Here's Smile Times 2. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
This is Phil the Issues Guy.
Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.
Helps.
We almost sank. We almost got there.
Yeah, it was close. It was close, considering. Maybe we should, next time we'll turn on Skype Live and do it and make eye contact then.
Yeah, absolutely.
See you guys later. Yeah.
Too bad, baby.
Yes, too bad, baby.
About to be there.
About to be there.
to be there. Everyone going with plastic suits and hoes are smiling. A young son.